Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCrit Podcast. Today, we're going to do a topic I am covering merely because I have to. We've done hyponatremia. Hyponatremia, to my mind, is sexy now. Hypernatremia, not so much. But I wanted to have a place on the blog and podcast where I'd put all the information about hypernatremia so that I could find it when I need it. And I have needed it a few times in the past couple weeks. So we'll get this one done. It's not that bad. And you're going to deal with it in both the ED and ICU. So you need to know about it. For some reason, though, I just can't get excited about hypernatremia. Before we get to that, we are doing the MCrit, the EM Critical Care Conference again in New York, January 11th. If you are not in one of the New York City or Greater New York Area residencies and you want to come, we have a limited number of tickets and it's going to be incredible. I think we have 10 ED critical care speakers this year on a wide range of topics. It's going to be phenomenal. If you're interested, go to mcritconference.com, mcritconference.com. All right, back to hypernatremia. I've seen some, from my limited physiological understanding, some bad treatments of this disease state, and that's why I'm doing this podcast. So let's go through it. So how do you become hypernatremic? You need either a loss of free water and or a loss of hypotonic fluid, meaning that the concentration of sodium is lower in the fluid that's lost than the rest of your plasma, for instance, GI secretions, etc. Or, and this is rarer, you could have a big solute load. You could have, therefore, too little free water or too much salt. And then this is the key in order for those things to actually lead to hypernatremia. You either need to have a altered thirst response or limited access to water. Otherwise, you would drink your way back to a normal sodium by consuming water or water-like liquids. So those are how you become hypernatremic. And again, the too much salt is a much rarer cause. It's almost always, for whatever reason, loss of free water or loss of hypotonic fluid. What are the results of hypernatremia? And I didn't know this before I started researching this podcast, but you lose the ability to easily deal with glucose. Your ability to get glucose into the cells is diminished, so these patients may be hypernatremic. And this has ramifications when you actually treat these patients with the easily available IV-free water, which is D5W, because they might not be able to easily deal with that increased glucose load. You could wind up with rhabdo. You could obviously wind up with altered mental status in the higher ranges of sodium levels, and you could seize. And you know all this because it's similar, except for the impaired glucose metabolism, to hyponatremia. And treatment's easy, right? You just immediately lower them down to normal in the span of 2 or 3 hours. No, don't do that. Why? Because unlike osmotic demyelination, which you get from rapidly correcting hyponatremia for reasons that are of similar paths but the opposite, you could get cerebral shrinkage if you too rapidly correct hypernatremia. Now, on the blog site at mcrit.org/187, which is the show notes for this episode, I have a chart of all the causes of hypernatremia. I stole this directly from the Deranged Physiology blog, a blog I love, because I hate making HTML tables. So I just stole theirs, and it's good because it has all the stuff there. I added in a couple of things. Let's deal with the easy one first, the one I said is rare. Too much salt. So you could get this from giving patients like hypertonic saline or its close cousin, sodium bicarbonate, which is also hypertonic saline. And so if you gave a ton of that, yes, you could wind up hypernatremic from too much salt. Or you could be drinking the Dead Sea, so ingestion of salt water. That's super high. Or actually, I take it back, any ocean water. If you kept drinking that, you would become hypernatremic, which is why you can't survive on the life raft by drinking the ocean. And there's salt pica, it seems, you know, the desire to just eat salt for some kind of psychological problem. And there was actually a story on the Precious Bodily Fluids blog, a blog I follow on nephrology, where someone was dared to drink a quart of soy sauce. And of course, if you're dared to do something, you must do it, especially if they double dog dare you. And this person wound up, obviously, with an insanely high sodium. I'm forgetting how high, but it was like, I think it was 180 or something like that. You know, scary high. Obviously, those folks you could correct very rapidly and probably should, because your brain's not going to like that sodium level that was achieved in the course of a few minutes. All right, so that's salt gain. Then you have free water or hypotonic fluid loss. And these could be renal or extra renal. Let's deal with the extra renal ones first. Sweating, exposure, burns, GI losses like NG suction, diarrhea, if it's from an osmotic cause, not from a secretory cause. So, you know, your classic E. coli diarrhea won't cause this. You're going to lose a lot of electrolytes in that fluid, but the osmotic diarrhea, like the kind that is induced by lactulose therapy or some of the other more underdeveloped world diarrheas, or fever from, you know, obviously the insensible losses of fever. So those are your extrarenal losses. This is where a lot of your nursing home patients' problems start, because they have insensible and extrarenal water loss and they can't get water, either because they're demented and their thirst reflex is blunted, or even if they had an active thirst reflex, they just lie in their bed, you know, begging, water, water, and no one comes. I mean, I guess this is a very dismal perspective on nursing homes, but from what I see they're sending us, I'm not sure how many four gold star nursing homes there really are out there. Okay, so those were extra renal water losses. Then there's the renal water losses from things like glucosuria, you know, your patient with profound hyperglycemia, mannitol therapy, urea therapy, loop diuretics. This is interesting. Things like furosemide cause free water loss in excess of their naturesis, meaning that you're going to lose free water out of proportion to the amount of salt you lose, and therefore the net effects are hypernatremia. This is why we could use furosemide and other loop diuretics as a therapy for hyponatremia. Post-obstructive diuresis and hyperaldosteronism. And I guess also there should have been Cushing syndrome or too much cortisol. Either of those also could cause renal losses and result in hypernatremia. And then the one, which you, I guess, could put in the renal loss category or its own separate, which is diabetes insipidus, insipid diabetes. Ooh, diabetes, you're so insipid. And that could be either from nephrogenic, direct problem with the kidneys, not able to react to the ADH secreted by your brain, or central, the brain is not secreting it, often seen after a TBI or subarachnoid hemorrhage or other bad things happening in the head. Now, how do you know if the losses are renal or extrarenal? Urinosm helps. If the urinosm is greater than your serumosm, then it is probably a extrarenal loss. If your urinosmolality is dilute while your serum osmolality is quite high, then it's probably a renal problem, and you start suspecting things like an osmotic diuresis or diabetes insipidus, etc. I have a chart documenting all of this at the show notes. Okay, how are you going to treat it? The first thing is stop or correct the underlying cause. So if the patient's profoundly febrile, try to work on that fever. If the patient's drinking soy sauce, smack it out of their hands and say, no, no more soy sauce for you. But, you know, whatever the underlying cause is, try to stop that. Okay, now if they got to the sodium level super rapid style, they drank that quart of soy sauce, then you could bring them down quite quickly, maybe 2-3 millimoles per hour. But if it was slow, and your presumption usually in these patients, if you don't really know, is you got there slowly, especially if the patient has crazy high levels and they're talking to you. You know, if you have a sodium of 168 and the patient's conversing with you, chances are they got there slowly, not rapidly, because their brain has kind of adapted to it. Then you're going to correct them slowly, just like hyponatremia. And without great evidence, and there's a fantastic post on the Precious Bodily Fluids blog about what the evidence really is, but without great evidence, most of the sources say you get 10 milliequivalents or millimoles per liter per day. 10 per day. 12 would be easier, and some books do say 12, but 10 is the most frequently quoted number, which means less than 0.5 millimoles per liter per hour. That's what you get. That's what you're looking for. So how do you correct them to that rate? Well, in most of the cases, it's going to be by administering free water. Now, the safest way to do that is by oral or GI tube free water. And that's what we do in the ICU, is we just give them free water boluses. If you have to go IV because the patient can't drink, then the key is to administer hypotonic fluids, not normal saline. Now, do you detect a theme here? Normal saline, no good for hyponatremia. Normal saline, no good for hypernatremia. Just stop giving these patients with salt problems normal saline and everything gets better. Now, why not? You look at saline, you say it's 154. Obviously, if they're 165, this is the perfect fluid because it will just slowly bring them down and you can't overshoot that much. And it doesn't actually work that way. Especially if they have any component of DI, what they'll do is hold on to the solute and pee out the free water. So you've actually made the situation worse. Even in patients without any component of DI, when you actually look at the formulas for how much change normal saline actually leads to, it is insanely low for the amount of volume you're giving these patients. So normal saline is not the answer, and it's potentially making things worse, especially if you have a super old patient with an ejection fraction of 15%. The only time you should give these guys an isotonic fluid, and I still want to give saline, I'd probably give something like lactated Ringer's, is when you think the patient is hypovolemic such that they are having deficits in their perfusion. Now, let me say that again, because all of my people I see treating this disease, like I'll talk to a resident, they'll be like, oh no, look, the patient's obviously dehydrated. Look at them. They're a nursing home patient and they haven't had access to water. I need to rehydrate them. But that's not the question you should be asking yourself. Because, yeah, of course that nursing home patient is dehydrated, meaning whole body and cells are experiencing a deficit of the water that they should have. But that doesn't mean hypovolemia, meaning that their intravascular space is severely depleted. The only patients who should get isotonic fluids like lactated Ringer's and or normal saline are patients who are hypotensive, demonstrating perfusion problems, lactate is up, thready pulse, all of the things. I mean, if you wanted to, you could do an ultrasound and a passive leg raise on these guys to decide. But the point is, almost all these patients are perfusing just fine. Their hypovolemia, if present at all, is not profound. They are whole body dehydrated. They do not need normal saline. And in fact, normal saline may make things worse. So don't do it. So what you're going to choose is a hypotonic fluid. Now, here are your choices. You could give half NS. Don't recommend it. You could give quarter NS. This is actually a not horrible choice. It has a little bit of solute in it, but it avoids all the glucose problems of D5W. So if your hospital has that, that's always a valid option. But probably the best thing to give is D5W, with the understanding you're going to have to deal with the sugar issues. You could, and John Hines talked about this in his fantastic talk on the MCRIT site, give sterile water by a central line. But most of the pharmacies outside of John's place in Ireland are very hesitant to do this for whatever reason. And yeah, I can't find great evidence on it to justify it to my pharmacist. But this is what you'd probably want to do in a critically ill patient, is instead of dealing with the hyperglycemia of D5W, just give them sterile water. But you're going to have to figure out how much. Now, there are a host of formulas out there for calculating free water deficit. And then you could, you know, decide how much you want to give. And generally, you shoot to correct at that less than 10 milliequivalents per day. And I don't use those formulas. I use the Androge Medeus formula. Now, we talked about this in hyponatremia and said they don't work. The cool thing is, like, all the confounders that make these formulas not work in hyponatremia don't really apply to hypernatremia. For the most part, these formulas should work. But what I recommend you do is calculate the amount, the desired fluid you choose will correct the sodium per liter, and then pick out an amount you're going to give per hour based on that. And if you go to the website, you'll see what formula I'm talking about and how it works. And it has all of the amounts of sodium in each of these fluids, so you can easily plug it in. But calculate it out, get a volume per hour you're going to administer, but then send the sodium 2 hours later and recalculate everything at that 2-hour mark based on this new sodium. Do that a few times and see, are the formulas accurately predicting or not? And therefore, even if the formula's off somewhat, you're still golden. So that's what I recommend you do. Go to the Sendrogue Medea's formula, calculate how much you need, how much a liter will change their sodium, and then use the magic of division to figure out how much you're going to give per hour to get that 0.5 or less millimoles per liter per hour, and then recheck the sodium and recalculate. Okay, so that's the way you're going to deal with just like a nursing home patient who comes in, they've had loss of free fluid from insensible loss, inability to get water, and just calculate how much they need to slowly bring them back up and start administering it, usually as D5W, check sugars, obviously, recalculate with a new sodium. All right, that's one clinical scenario. The key to this, don't give saline unless the patient's profoundly hypoperfused. Let's talk about DI. Now, you could have patients who are, you know, relatively okay, not critically ill with DI. And the way you're going to treat those patients is you could start off with free water. And a lot of times you're going to have to supplement with DDAVP. And that could be given intranasally or subcutaneously. And I think I'm just going to send you to a fantastic chapter in a book by Joel Topf. He's the second author. He writes the Precious Bodily Fluids blog. And he did a wonderful fluid and electrolyte book that he has for free. So if you go to mcrit.org/187, at the top of the post, you'll find a link to Joel's book, and it will tell you all the doses. I'm not going to go through them here on DDAVP, but read the chapter from his book, and I have like three review articles there as well that also list the dosing and everything. So you're going to give these guys free water in the form of actual water if their GI tract is accessible, or D5W, and you'll supplement that with DDAVP. You'll get their urine output less than like 100 mLs per hour, and then eventually they're going to get better. The DI I want to talk about very briefly is the DI I encountered for the first time when I had a patient really attempting hard to herniate in the ICU. This was during my first ICU fellowship, and they were just pouring out urine, like 400 mLs per hour. And I thought it was a clever move to replace these losses with NS, and discovered proof that normal saline does not fix this problem. It makes it much, much worse. And this patient who needed vasopressor support in addition to turning off their diabetes insipidus, I actually put on a vasopressin drip when my attending very kindly educated me on how to do this. And that's what you want to do on these critically ill patients, at least initially, is start them off with vasopressin if they need vasopressor support as well. And you could titrate the dose to get some reasonable urine output, like less than 100. You'll also see this in the subarachnoid patients as well. And honestly, at the doses we're using of the vaso, oftentimes the elevation of their blood pressure is not really an issue. I don't see a significant pressor effect from these doses. And then eventually you could transition them to DDAVP. This is obviously the treatment of central DI. Nephrogenic DI, which they won't respond to the DDAVP, much bigger issue. I'm not even going to delve into that. If that's of interest to you, again, go to those sources in the show notes. But honestly, you probably should just get a nephrologist involved if that's what you think the patient has. Okay. Hypertonic sodium gain. You gave the patient tons and tons of sodium bicarb. Maybe they were in a cardiac arrest and you gave them like 8 amps of sodium bicarb, and now they're profoundly hypernatremic and they're volume overloaded. Well, these guys, you don't have to give a ton of water to get them down, because that's going to give them a lot of excess fluids. What you could do instead is actually give them a loop diuretic like furosemide. And you might say, well, you just said that you have free water loss in excess of your sodium loss. That's going to make their sodium higher. Yeah, you'll have to do that in conjunction with free water, and that will lower their sodiums. It might make a lot more sense to give them a thiazide diuretic. I think the reason people don't is that we're just not familiar with them as much in the ICU. But that might make more sense, but I don't have any dosing or recommendations on that. All right, the last scenario I want to talk about is ICU hypernatremia. And so many ICU patients get hypernatremic, especially later on in their course. And how do you deal with this? Free water is what we'll usually do. We'll just start free water boluses. But the reason they might be hypernatremic is that you might be at the end phase when you're starting to deresuscitate and you're trying to diurese them. And so you just give them a bunch of Lasix. They get hypernatremic as a result. I'm sorry, furosemide, the generic name. And we're causing this. Josh Farkas on the PalmCrit site, which is part of the MCrit site, has a wonderful post on how to deal with this, and it is gorgeous, and I can't do any better, so I will just refer you there. So if you want to deal with ICU hypernatremia as a result of deresuscitation, and if you want to know how to continue to diurese these patients and get their edema down without making them hypernatremic and therefore thwarting your whole efforts, then just read Josh's post. Okay. So there you go. It's done. We've finished it. We've managed to get through the non-sexy topic of hypernatremia. It's almost always due to free water or hypotonic fluid loss, sometimes due to solute gain, but rarely. And you need to have a thirst response that is either blunted or thwarted. The way you treat it is not with normal saline. It's with hypotonic fluids in almost every case, either oral or gastric, or if you have to, IV. Use the Androge Medeas formula to figure out how much you need, and then check your work with consistent sodiums. If it's profound and the patient has altered mental status or coma, they probably need to go to an ICU. Otherwise, you know, judge accordingly based on your hospital. And I think that's the major points I wanted to hit. If you have any questions or I missed something or screwed something up, put it in the show notes at mcrit.org/187. Scott Weingart for the MCrit podcast saying bye-bye.